This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. Today, Reggie warns of the dangers of using spiritual language, teachings, and forms to hide our humanity. He says the Dharma is not a commodity. To teach the true Dharma, we must practice regularly, speak directly from personal experience, and show up as we are. This talk was given at the 2012 Winter Datun Retreat, held in Crestone, Colorado.
How's everybody doing? I have been instructed to give a talk, which I don't particularly want to give, but hey, what else is new? And I'm going to get it over with so then we can sit. Which is actually why I'm really here. It's for everybody here. And it's probably the most important thing in this lineage. And, you know, whether you're a teacher or a meditation instructor or whether you're, you never sat in your life, it's equally applicable. And this is the issue of being genuine. What Rinpoche used to call genuineness, being genuine. And all of us have ways of hiding out. And the lineage is about dropping the cover, dropping the mask, and being there, and being showing up, and being available, and being undefended. That's the Vajrayana way. And that, it's asking a lot in our culture to be asking ourselves to show up like that and not to hide out, not to hide behind roles or, you know, positions or our victimhood, or there's so many ways of hiding. There was a, Caroline and I have been talking about this last few days quite a bit. And I was thinking back to the beginnings of when Rinpoche was starting to teach about Shambhala. And his idea was that he had received these transmissions about Shambhala. And if you don't know what that is, you can do some reading or talk to your friends. But it's part of his, a very important part of his teaching. And he received a bunch of transmissions of, you know, we could say he received a lot of insights about a different way to present Buddhism, a more more using everyday language and less relying on the Tibetan forms, which is what we do. I mean, I am a Shambhala teacher. Even though I don't use this particular program and the language of the program that was set up by him, that's what we do here. We're a Shambhala community, really. And in the early days, you know, first he kind of saw for himself what he needed to do. And then his idea was that this teaching, which, you know, you're receiving, he thought that Tibetan Buddhism, in its traditional form, it's powerful and it's deep, but in its traditional form, it's limited in the people it can reach, obviously. And he also felt as time went on, it was going to be less and less interesting for people. And so he came up with this, I mean, it wasn't him, but, you know, he saw that there would be a way to present the exact same teachings that are in these very traditional formats, but do it in a way that could reach a lot of people. And that's what Dharmotion is about. It's about actualizing that vision of his. And we see it, you know, we see how so many different people around the world now are using these teachings and using the body work, and they're not Buddhists and they never will be, but the teachings are surviving. And so that was the direction. And he wanted his students to teach this material. And so with him, they created what's now called Shambhala Training. And what people don't realize is he actually didn't create that. That was actually us. He came up with a couple of themes for each of these levels and graduate programs and everything, just literally two or three or four words. And then we filled it in, and then it was checked back with him. So he was involved in it, but it was really us, you know. It was giving his students a kind of vocabulary to reach the world. And the thing is, you know, we didn't embody the teachings ourselves fully. And what happened was we were parrots. We were trying to be, when we went out and started teaching, we were trying to be Rinpoche. We imitated his jokes. We imitated his way of speaking. And we presented the teachings as if they were ours, and they weren't. They were not. You know, those of us who are hard and aggressive talked about how important it is to have an open and tender heart, and we're lecturing people. We're not talking to people, we're lecturing them and presenting the teachings as if they're ours and they're not. And I rarely have ever seen him so angry. He was so angry. Because he said, you're pretending things that are not yours. And if this is what you're transmitting, that the Dharma is a commodity, that you can read some books and then you can go out and act like it's yours when it's not, that will corrupt. That's the end of the lineage. The lineage will be over if you start doing that. He was really, really angry. And one of the sad things is that tendency just kept right on going. And you know, there were people, I mean, you could say, why weren't we able to embody the teachings? Why weren't we? But that's the wrong question. We used the teachings to hide behind so that we didn't have to come out and present ourselves. The only thing you ever have to offer other people is you and your life. The minute you start adopting the teachings as a kind of commodity and you begin to ape what you think it should look like, you're hiding. You are hiding out. Now, you know, there are a lot of reasons we hide out, but I think some of them are, for example, insufficient practice. And, you know, a day without practice is a day where you are disempowered as a teacher. You cannot teach anything about the Dharma unless the practice is alive in you today. So that's number one, is people thought they could just come and present this great stuff and, you know, there are all these teachings and Trungpa Rinpoche says this and Trungpa Rinpoche says that, but meantime they're hiding. See what I'm getting at? And the other thing is unresolved personal issues that many of us were not showing up. We might have been practitioners, and this is, you know, it's really hard maybe message at the Dhaton, but many of us were very serious practitioners, but we simply had not dealt with too many unresolved emotional issues and traumas and, you know, things from our own past, and so we were hiding out again. You know, the whole thing was about hiding out, being safe, rather than actually presenting who we actually were. So to be a teacher in this lineage, you have to practice and you have to do the personal work at a deep level through your whole entire life. And then you have to simply show up as yourself without any cloaks or any posturing or any hiding out or building fortresses or, you know, all the things we do, particularly as teachers. And, you know, this is a work in progress for all of us because, of course, we all have those tendencies, you know, from top to bottom. And part of the legitimacy of this sangha depends upon us correcting each other and calling each other and giving each other feedback. I'm very concerned because there are people in our sangha and teachers who are using the teachings to hide out and to build fortresses and to refuse feedback. I'm very concerned. And, you know, it's not like it's not an issue for me too. It is. You know, luckily I have Caroline, who, you know, when I met Caroline, she was so sweet. And she's still sweet. But Caroline, she totally gets it. And she gets what happens if I go funny to this lineage. And she cares about this lineage more than she cares about me, which is actually good. It's good. The integrity of the lineage is more important to her than I am. And it has to be that way. Otherwise it won't work. And Caroline, over the years, has become more and more ruthless in relation to me. And it's very sweet, it's very tender. Occasionally she opens up the floodgates and I'm blasted against the wall, you know, like in those cartoons where you're flattened. But generally speaking, I'm smart enough not to let it get to that point. And so I listen and I try to take it in, and she's very patient with me. But we all need somebody like Caroline in our life. And if we are teachers, it often comes down to being the Sangha, actually, and our peer group of teachers. The reason I'm telling you this is Dharma Ocean is not a done deal. Dharma Ocean, the integrity of Dharma Ocean is only as good as the integrity of the teachers and the MIs and the Sangha. And it's not like we can put it all on teachers and the MIs. I mean, it depends on you, too. If you see something going on that doesn't look right, you have to say something. Whether it's me or, you know, an MI or a teacher. You are members of this lineage. And simply by showing up here, you have been entrusted with maintaining the integrity of what we're doing. And again, the integrity comes down to genuineness. It's not adding on to your person anything extra. And in fact, being willing to strip yourself down completely and just show up as you are. So, you know, there are different ways that we have of hiding out and of not being genuine. If we want to talk about the teaching role, you know, one of the ways is what I would call the passion style of. See, there's real genuineness, and interestingly enough, there's fake genuineness. There's genuineness that's not genuine. Isn't that interesting? You think, well, I'm being genuine. No, not necessarily. Maybe genuineness is actually a mask behind which you're not being genuine. You're not showing up. So one of the fake styles of genuineness I would call the passion style, which is, you know, poor little me, I can't really do anything, I'm not very good, and, you know, I'm just going to present a little bit here, and I'm kind of confused, and that's me, and I'm being genuine. But what's not happening is the person you actually are is not being offered. And maybe you're really smart, and maybe you're a little angry, maybe you're incredibly, you know, like your warmth is embarrassing, who knows what it is. But the sort of shrinking style and kind of just kind of holding a very small space, that's a way of hiding out. A second style I would call the aggression style, which is that you have the teachings under control, you've studied a lot, you've practiced a lot, you know what's going on, and you can tell people what the teachings are, and you're going to teach, and you're going to tell people. this is good, this is what we do, this is bad, this is, we don't do that here, this is not what we do. But what the students get is they get this download of ideology, rhetoric, and dogma, basically, is what's going on. A lot of us do that, and that's another way of not being genuine. And we may feel, hey, you know, I totally understand the teachings from top to bottom, and I'm presenting it, but we're hiding out. Because again, the only thing as a teacher that you have to offer is your naked, true experience. That's all you have. You have nothing else. So this is very tricky for us in, you know, in our lineage, because the fact of the matter is we do have to do a lot of study, you know, to have a vocabulary for the teachings. We have to study a lot. And we have to practice even more. And we have to hold a lot, we hold power, you know, different ones of us hold different kinds of power. But the thing is, when you actually sit down in front of people, you've got to just present your own nakedness as nothing else. The tendency, you know, when we are feeling threatened, the tendency to hide out is very strong. And particularly among teachers, there's a tendency to want to retreat to what we think we already know. But then our talks come off as either incredibly sort of confused and rambling and unclear, or they come off as canned lectures that never really land, actually, on anybody's experience. Now, I'm bringing this up because it's not because there's a right way and a wrong way, but because we, and you know, you as future teachers, if you stick to this, you're going to be making the very same journey that the rest of us are. We are going to be working on these issues. And the only saving grace is feedback from other people. It's the only one, it's the only thing that's going to save us from going down the drain and becoming another religious organization where there's all this posturing and all this rhetoric and all this self-importance, but the atmosphere is dead, nothing's happening. And all of us have been in those organizations over and over. We've all been there. Part of our upbringing, part of running around, you know, to all the spiritual scenes. We've seen it. You know, we know what it looks like. The only saving grace is communication and feedback. And the Sangha needs to become like Caroline, which is committed to the integrity of the lineage more than anything else, and number two, ruthless in the feedback, in the communication loop. And what happens, you know, when we do that is we hurt people's feelings. We ourselves make mistakes in giving feedback. We're too aggressive, you know, we're defensive, we get mixed up. But the Vajra regent, Ursul Tenzin, who many of you know, had a sort of catastrophic final exit, you know, from the earthly realm, told me once, it doesn't really matter. You know, if you sit there, somebody gives you feedback and you say, well, I'm sorry, I don't agree with that, and you push it away. He said, I don't care if it's a homeless person on the street that throws up on you. That's feedback. And every feedback that comes in your direction is coming from the lineage. And your first and last thing is opening yourself to it and feeling bad and, you know, being suspicious that the person's motivations are fucked up, whatever it is. But you have to let it in, and you really have to let it devastate you. Often when we get feedback, particularly when we're in positions of power, we have ways of fending it off. You know, all of us have different ways of doing it. But if you do that, he's telling me, you're finished, and the lineage is finished. Somehow within yourself, you have to find the existential and ontological willingness to let yourself be devastated by something which you don't even know if it's accurate or not. You have to let the energy in, and you have to let it work on you. And you have to let yourself have a sleepless night, and then the next day you come into Dhaton and you cannot teach, you feel so bad. And that's how it has to be as a teacher. And you just have to let it happen. Now, is this something that can be learned? Interesting question. Is it something, a capacity that we all have that's innate? I don't really know. But I do know that when we operate outside the realm of feedback, and we find ways to dismiss feedback or keep it at arm's length or manipulate the feedback so that it isn't quite so penetrating, this lineage is in big trouble. So it's inevitable that, you know, we often say that there are two datans. One is the datan of the participants, and we've been saying it actually a lot, this datan. And the other datan is the datan of the staff, which includes the head teachers, the meditation instructors, the protection mandala, the folks in the kitchen, the coordinators, includes everybody on the staff. And that datan sometimes is even more intense than your datan, which is quite interesting. And somehow the intensity, you know, if that's not happening on the staff level, then it's going to diminish your experience. So it's interesting that the journey aspect on the staff level has to be allowed to happen full-blown. And you may, I don't think you've heard this, but sometimes, you know, teachers yell at each other. The MIs are so fed up and pissed off they can't even talk to each other. Staff members can't even be in the same room with each other. And that's what's called the staff datan. But the thing is, the space holds us. And the space holds all of us. And the space holds the journey. And we just need to, we need to show up and trust it. We need to be there with it. So this whole thing of being genuine, you hear a lot of stories about Trungpa Rinpoche, but it's very hard to convey. He always was himself. And whatever he was teaching was, it was very clear what was his experience and how he felt about it. And he was really just sharing his own experience, really, with all of us, always. That's all he ever did. And nothing was ever added on. He didn't add stuff on. He didn't hide out. He didn't posture. And we need to be the same way, you know, in this lineage. And we also have to realize that we're going to check out, you know, particularly the more power we have in situations and the more threatened we feel and the more we want to do a good job, the more the tendency is to check out in various ways and to hide and to treat the Dharma as if it's some kind of commodity, you know, it's some kind of thing that you can learn and then give it to people, impose it on them. But you're always going to get the feedback if you do it. You're always going to have somebody who says, you know, maybe somebody leaves the program. You know, maybe you have an interaction and you tell a person, you know, you shake your finger at them, so to speak. You know, you slip as a teacher, you shake your finger at them and say, we don't do it that way. And then they leave the next day. That's feedback. So there's all kinds of feedback, but it's always there. And Anil told me the other day that he didn't used to, he's paranoid this year, but he wasn't in the past. And actually that really worried me. How anybody could be in this lineage and not be paranoid. No, I'm serious. I'm incredibly paranoid. All the time. Morning, noon, and night. Incredibly paranoid. Because I realize I can, you know, become an egomaniac at the drop of a hat. And I know what that looks like, and I know the impact. Because of my position, I know the impact when I'm aggressive or I check out and I'm not relating to things or whatever I do. I know the impact, and I know there are a lot of karmic consequences when you are hurtful to a student because of your own aggression or your own, you know, you get into lecturing people about the Dharma and telling them how it is. It's so hurtful to students to do that. And I've done it many, many times, and I'm capable of it, and I'm really, really, really paranoid. I'm really paranoid. And in case I start becoming less paranoid, I've got Caroline there. And she just kind of, I look at her and I become paranoid again. Speaking of Caroline, I haven't really talked to you much about Caroline, have I? But you have the download now. You get it, I think. Somebody said a few days ago, you know, Caroline, in a few years, I won't be afraid of you anymore. And my thought was, no, you know, maybe I'm missing something, but the only way you could not be afraid of Caroline is if you actually build up your ego fortress to the point where she can't get in anymore. She can't get through to you. We should all be afraid of each other, actually, in that particular unusual way. We should be afraid that the lineage is going to find us out and is going to expose us, and then we're going to have to let go of something. Because the quality of awake in this group, in this room, you know, in this program, it's very high. But are we willing to communicate with each other? Are we willing to send a note to the teachers? And you don't have to sign it if you don't want to. If you feel one of us is on some kind of trip, or is being, you know, aggressive, or is whatever it may be, you can always send a note to the teachers. And you can always just say, you know, you should be gentle, because it's very hard to hear negative feedback, but you should say, you know, I feel you're not showing up. You're talking about how we all need to show up and you're not showing up. You can always do that. And maybe you're off base, but it's better to be off base than to be right and not to do it, or to have something really important to say and to hold back because you're not sure. Do you see what I mean? And I'm not saying, like, everybody in the room should immediately start writing all three of his notes. You know, I'm not suggesting that, but the quality of being a mirror is something that all of us have that responsibility in this situation. We all need to be mirrors for each other. And we need to find ways to do it. And we need to, you know, we need to try to do it gently, but we need to do it clearly. And holding back, well, I'm just a beginning student and I don't really know. Actually, you do know. And the thing is, you know. We all know. We all know, and we all know we know. And when we say, I don't know, on some level, we all know that we're saying we don't know because we're not willing to step forward. It's not because we don't know. If you follow me.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.